In July 1942, Japanese forces landed in Papua New Guinea and began advancing on Port Moresby. Their next stop? Australia. With our best soldiers fighting in the Middle East, only one thing stood in the all-conquering Japanese Imperial Army's way: a poorly trained battalion of young soldiers who'd never seen combat. Reg Chard was one of them.
My name's Reginald James Chard. I was born in Haberfield in Sydney, and I grew up in Marrickville. That's where we lived for most of our life.
With Australia in peril, when Reg turned 18, he decided to follow his two older brothers into uniform.
I had my parents' permission to join, and the gentleman said, "What did you do?" I told him I was an apprentice for bacon pastry cook, and he said, "We don't take apprentice, you've got to finish your apprenticeship, then come back." So I took a job, and the job was a storeman, which wasn't classed as anything special in those days. I've got 1 week's pay, went back to the same gentleman, showed him my pay slip, and I was in the army for the next 5 years.
The Japanese had landed on the other side of Papua New Guinea to Australia, but they only had to walk the 160-kilometre Kokoda track to Port Moresby and they could attack our country. Reg and the 39th Battalion marched up and over the Owen Stanley Ranges from Port Moresby to stop them. But with only a small force, after a few months, they got pushed almost all the way back to the sea. Luckily, however, just when the Japanese could see the twinkling lights of the port, Reg and his comrades were reinforced by battle-hardened Australian soldiers from the 6th and 7th Division, who'd been brought back from the Middle East to defend Australia. The Australians now forced the desperate and starving Japanese back up the Kokoda track.
When you're in the jungle itself, it's pitch black. You imagine it's only about 3 or 4 foot wide, the trail, you're walking single file. The sun never breaks through because the trees are all just intermingled. You can only see about 3 feet in front of you, and because the Japanese are sitting there waiting for you. They've got all their jungle greens and everything on, so half the time you can never ever see them till they moved, and that's the only time you'd hear something rustle and you just try and fire a shot there. If you hear a scream, you know they killed somebody, and other than that, you have no idea.
It wasn't just the Japanese that killed Australian soldiers. The tropical environment lent itself to all manner of ghastly diseases.
With scrub typhus, malaria, dysentery, hookworm, beriberi. There was more men collapsed with these diseases than what there was killed or shot, because the Japanese suffered the same things, and also the fuzzy wuzzies. They also got exactly the same things as what we got. Their biggest disease, of course, was pneumonia. It killed a lot of them. I've seen men with dysentery, hookworm, and they won't leave the front line till the last second till they collapse, and then they've got to be carried out. So there were some very, very game people went up there.
And while the Australians were brave, Reg says the Japanese were braver, contesting every inch of ground.
The only time we ever got them out in the open was a place called Manari. What they'd do was just charge straight at you. I mean, it was just suicide in a way. They'd come charging at you with their swords, and of course you've got a rifle or a submachine gun, whatever you happen to have. They weren't frightened of dying. So the only thing is, as they rush towards you with a sword, is you just try and blow their head off or put a bullet in their stomach, because that'd blow them backwards when you're so close. But they weren't afraid of dying. They'd do anything for the emperor. They were just unbelievable.
While the Japanese might have been brave, according to Reg, they were also ruthless. The Australians knew they could never leave their wounded behind.
There was two gentlemen up there, two brothers. The older brother was looking after the younger one, and the younger person got a terrible machine gun burst in his tummy. He was going to die and was being pushed backwards, so his brother had to shoot his own brother, just put a bullet in his brain and walk away and leave him. A terrible thing to do, but you couldn't leave any wounded behind to the Japanese to get hold of.
But it wasn't only the Japanese who did terrible things. Reg remembers the day they learned one of his fellow soldiers had lied about his age.
Word came up that morning that he had to be sent home that day because he was 16 years of age on that morning. And instead of that, the officer wasn't a nice man, sent him out on patrol. When you went out on patrol, they normally sent 7, and you know it was near 3 to 4 weren't coming back. Our Joe was one of these ones who's got a terrible tummy wound, and of course he died. So the next morning, the officer who sent him out was found dead, shot dead. We killed him. We shot him dead. We did some terrible, terrible things, I can tell you.
Having been chased all the way back up the Kokoda track to where they landed, it was now the Japanese who had their backs to the sea. But that didn't mean things would get easier for the Australians. Reg was one of the men chosen to charge the Japanese position to push them back into the ocean.
I was standing in the middle. Dick Chaos from Ingleburn was on one side of me. Alan Davis from Dulwich Hill was on the other side and was waiting for the sun to break through. This was about 3 o'clock in the morning to make our first charge. Dick said to me, if we get through this, he said, I'm going to marry my girlfriend, Isabel. He said, I want you to be my best man. He took one step forward. Japanese sniper up in the tree put a bullet straight through his brain and killed him. And Alan Davidson from Dulwich Hill was on the other side of me, and he got one straight through the temple, and I was standing in the middle of them.
Despite this horrific experience, Red still had to prepare himself to charge the enemy once more.
Now, the Japanese had been there for 6.5 months. Our first charge was just after Dick Chaos and Alan Davidson were killed. That's what we were standing there waiting to go forward. This was my battalion alone. So as we charged forward, they had us sitting in a crossfire, and the first 20 minutes, they killed 264. That was my battalion alone. So other battalions suffered the same casualties. San Ananda, we lost 1,640 killed in that 6 weeks period. If you could left the front line and you dropped dead 100 yards away from the front line, you would never ever count as killed in action. They were trying to keep the casualty rate down so people would never realise just how bad things were.
Eventually, 6 months after the Japanese first landed, the Australians pushed them off New Guinea and in the years that followed, back across the Pacific to Japan. But after the war ended, Reg found Anzac Day very hard.
To me, I don't go and I don't march for the simple reason I get too emotional. I don't want to upset anybody else. I don't upset myself. So I never, ever go to Anzac Day. And at home, my wife, when she was alive, I'd go up the yard in the garden, and that's where I'd stop for the day, just pottering around. I never listened to the radio, nothing. But that's only me, where other men are just the opposite.
Despite finding Anzac Day difficult, Reg has some good ideas when it comes to settling future wars.
Put all the politicians in, let them fight it out. And then maybe they'll change their minds. It's great sitting back there, send everybody else away. Take their children away and fight wars and see what happens then. Maybe then we mightn't have too many more wars.
95-year-old Reg Chard volunteers at the Kokoda Memorial Track Walkway in Concord in Sydney, sharing his experiences with school students and other visitors. Each year, he recites the Ode of Remembrance at Holsworthy High School's Anzac Day ceremony.